This is NPR Illinois. I'm Jamie Dunn. In terms of state government, a lot has and hasn't happened in the past year. Let's take a look at some of the top Illinois issues stories of 2015. Wealthy investor Bruce Rauner was sworn into office in January. He is the state's first Republican governor in well over a decade, and holding the office is his first job in politics. There were plenty of questions in those early days. What kind of leader would Rauner be? What are his top priorities? Amanda Vinicky explored these questions in a pair of articles for Illinois Issues. Along the way, she talked to some people who had advice for the new governor.
Inauguration Day is a time for pomp, lofty speeches, patriotic songs.
What is courage? What is honor? Are these words or just ideals long forgotten?
But oh so soon, the time for celebrations will stop and the difficult work of running a state will begin. If there ever was someone prepared for such a job, put partisanship aside here, I'm speaking strictly from a resume standpoint, Jim Edgar would make the list. When he became governor in 1991, he had already
served as Secretary of State, I'd served as a state legislator, I'd been an aide to a governor, I'd been an aide to the Speaker.
And yet,
I got to say that there were a lot of things when I became governor I just didn't know or wasn't prepared for.
Rauner, Edgar says, is going to have a lot to learn, and quick. Edgar, like Rauner, is a Republican. He says, especially given Rauner's inexperience in government, he's going to make mistakes. But he says everyone does. Edgar says what's imperative is Rauner learn from them and that he prioritize. While an education and economic development plan are important, he says that can wait.
I've told him, I said, you know, to me, the two most important things for you is to get a handle on the budget and to put your staff together.
Who Rauner chooses is important, says Ron Gidwitz. Gidwitz himself is a wealthy businessman who failed in his bid for governor in 2006. Gidwitz was a key backer of Rauner early on.
Nobody's going to do this all by themselves. It's all a question of picking the right people and delegating, and that's what the governor's going to do. I'm very excited about the prospects, given the people that he has already announced and the ones he will be announcing.
I caught Gidwitz as he was leaving the inauguration ceremony to go to lunch with Greg Bays, the head of the Illinois Manufacturing Association. Bays is a well-known lobbyist, and his association carries sway in Springfield, perhaps more now than ever. Here was Bays' recommendation for Rauner.
Got to be able to provide clear vision. One of the problems states had for the last 12 years is not strong executive leadership. Legislatures can't leave. Governors can.
Bays also served in former Governor Jim Thompson's cabinet. He understands Rauner will need legislators, or more specifically, he needs a certain number of them.
You got to get 30 in the Senate and 60 in the House. If you always remember that, you'll be well.
It's the sort of advice a lot of lobbyists would probably give. Nearly every legislator I talked to, and believe me, I asked a lot of them, had similar advice on the best way to get that done.
The one thing that he can do is have an open door policy, continue to meet with legislators and hear their concerns.
We are partners. The General Assembly is a partner in this process, and we have to work together.
Work with the General Assembly.
That was Representative John DiMicco of Chicago, Senator John Sullivan of Rushville, and Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park, all Democrats. Rauner has won praise for reaching out, but his repeated criticism of the General Assembly also left many legislators with bruises that won't quickly fade. And for all of the advice encouraging Rauner to be bipartisan, there's also advice along the lines offered by Republican Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon, who says that Rauner needs to remember his campaign promise to fix the budget.
Whatever he has to do, even when he is flying in the face of stiff opposition, he needs to stick to his guns on that, because that's the message that the people believe in. That's what the people want.
Rauner spent more than $65 million to become governor. A big chunk of that was his own money. Since taking office, he has set aside millions more into a political action committee with the express purpose of furthering his legislative agenda. In a July story for Illinois Issues, St. Louis Post-Dispatch political reporter Kevin McDermott took a look at how Rauner's cash carried the atmosphere of campaign season into the spring legislative session. I sat down with McDermott to talk about his story. When Bruce Rauner was running for governor, there was a lot of focus on his campaign spending, but it seems that even after he won the race, he continues to build his war chest. Can you tell us a little about his campaign finance strategies now?
He made no secret about this. Before he was even sworn into office, he was telling people, look, I'm going to be building up a PAC to help us get our agenda across. And this included donating $10 million to himself after he had won the election. This was almost unheard of because obviously you don't need any campaign funds immediately after you win an election. So this was the first sign that he was serious about this. The second sign that he was serious about it was in May when he, in one day, doled out $400,000 to every single Republican member of the legislature in both chambers. Nobody's up for re-election. They're in the middle of a big budget fight. There was really no question that this was money that was meant to get people to be cohesive, get people to, you know, stick together as a party and not wander off.
And to be clear, that $400,000 is the tally of all the money Browner doled out to Republican lawmakers that day. But we do see during legislative sessions sometimes different interest groups or lobbyists will make donations to lawmakers. How is this different than maybe what we've seen in the past?
That's been a big part of the debate because, of course, Rauner's supporters will tell you that it isn't different. His comments, to the extent that he's commented on this, have been essentially that, well, you know, the legislative leaders on the Democratic side and unions and other special interests are always throwing money at legislators. We're just countering that. Others point out that it's a little different for a few reasons. Most of the leadership money that goes to legislators goes in the election season. It doesn't go right after an election. Now, some special interest groups and some corporate groups, they will give money when legislators are in the middle of debating their issues. That always raises a few eyebrows. That's something that's always been a little controversial. Part of the reason that what the governor's doing has bothered some people is that it does look like kind of the seedier side of what sometimes happens with special interest groups. Should the governor be categorized with Ameren or the Chamber of Commerce or some other interest group that's throwing money at legislators as they're voting on stuff? The budget fight has essentially been over Rauner's insistence that if you're going to talk about tax increases, he wants something out of that. And what he wants out of that is property tax cuts, tort reform, workers' comp reform, something that is on what he calls his turnaround agenda. You know, a lot of the Republicans were already in agreement with Rauner on a lot of these issues. But that's not the same thing as keeping everybody in line when you're in the midst of a big budget fight like this. There is a lot of temptation to say, look, let's just wrap this thing up. Fine, we're not going to win this one. Let's walk away. By spreading this money around to people in the caucus, you could make the argument that he's essentially keeping them in place and making sure that they're not going to give up on this fight.
Illinois does not have a squeaky clean reputation for its political culture or campaign finance. Do you think that this will have a big impact over the years, or do you think this is something that we're just going to see with Bruce Rauner, and maybe once he's gone, things go back to the way that they were before?
That question might prompt two questions. One, is this going to set a precedent that future governors have to do? And two, is this going to prompt reformers and legislators to change the law so that people can't do this? I don't think it's going to prompt any major changes to the law because, make no mistake, Madigan and Cullerton, they throw money around like crazy. They do it in a different way, and they do it in a way that is more geared toward winning elections, but they certainly don't want more restrictions on what they can do. As for the first question, it could be that legislators come to expect that the governor wants my support, even if he's in my own party, I want the money from him. One wonders if in the future, whether the governor is a Democrat or a Republican, that the people of his own party in the legislature might look at him and go, hey, this is how it works now.
Since the spring legislative session ended and the new fiscal year began without a budget, the lack of a spending plan has overshadowed practically all other news in the state. Court orders and required spending have kept most of state government at least somewhat operational. However, money is not flowing to higher education and some social services. In this October story, Brian Mackey looks at how the lack of funding to social services could be part of the governor's strategy to get Democrats on board with his agenda.
In September 2012, the year before Bruce Rauner officially declared his candidacy for governor, he shared his vision for a crisis that could help reshape state government.
In Illinois, there's been a long time history of what I would call social service, social justice, a bigger role for government in a safety net than in many other states.
Rauner was speaking at a tax policy conference sponsored by the George W. Bush Institute.
I think we can drive a wedge issue in the Democratic Party on that topic and bring the folks who say, you know what, for our tax dollars, I'd rather help the disadvantaged, the handicapped, the elderly, the children in poverty. I'd rather have my tax dollars going to that than the SEIU or AFSCME, who are out there for their own interests.
3 years later, Rauner has lately been saying he's very unhappy Illinois is without a budget. But the governor was selective about what parts of state government he allowed to shut down. Elementary and high schools have been kept afloat. He signed that portion of the budget into law. Colleges and universities, on the other hand, have been cut out. Rauner went to court to make sure state employees kept getting paid, but social service agencies are without funding, resulting in service reductions and closures. That appears to be the early result of Rauner realizing his vision to conscript the disadvantaged into his battle against organized labor. Now Democrats are being asked to choose social services or unions.
Well, I think that's a false choice.
State Representative Christian Mitchell is a Democrat from Chicago.
Look, I'm the grandson of a union steelworker. The only reason why I'm here in this position as being a state representative is because of that great job that my grandfather had.
There's an angle from which Mitchell might appear to be a persuadable Democrat. He voted against the wishes of labor on the big 2013 pension overhaul, and unions responded with a tough primary campaign that made him work to hang on to his seat in the next election. But Mitchell says under Rauner's proposals, unions are facing an existential threat.
We're not going to sell out the middle class, an institution that's been important to the middle class, in order to have the governor do something he says he wants to do anyway, which is be compassionate.
Democrats have been offering this critique of Rauner's agenda for months, calling it extreme and saying his policies would hurt the middle class. But beyond that ostensibly noble posture, Democrats also have a significant political stake in the strength of Illinois labor. Unions, especially government unions like SEIU and AFSCME, have given millions of dollars to Democratic candidates.
If you weaken organized labor, you weaken the Democratic Party.
Robert Bruno is a professor of labor relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He says when some Republicans get elected to state government positions, they see unions, particularly government unions, as a continual source of opposition.
So sometimes it raises the question, is the target the actual union or is the target the Democratic Party?
Rauner continues campaigning for his policies in every corner of Illinois. He even held a series of meetings with representatives of social service organizations back in August. Andrea Durbin, director of the Illinois Collaboration on Youth, was at one of those meetings. She says Rauner seemed to support the mission of groups she represents, which help at-risk kids. But without a state budget, social service groups are quickly running out of money.
We do feel like we're being pawns in a game that's not, it's not about us. You know, let's be clear, the fight that's out there is not about human services.
Which is precisely the scenario, the wedge issue, that Rauner envisioned 3 years ago.
That was Brian Mackey. I'm Illinois Issues editor Jamie Dunn, and today we are revisiting the top stories from the past year. This next story, which I filed in October, takes a look at some of the people who are caught in the fight between the governor and Democratic leaders. When Sherry Crabb was a kid, a crisis counselor helped change her life. Crabb's father had a substance abuse problem, and there was domestic violence in the house.
I grew up in a home that had holes in the walls from fists being thrown and emergency telephone numbers taped under my sister's bed, just in preparation for that one night my mother may need rescuing from the police.
That night eventually came, and the girls made the call as they hid under the bed. The police came with a crisis counselor from the Southern Illinois-based Family Counseling Center. The sisters were placed in foster care and began therapy, which Crabb says helped her heal from trauma. Today, she is the executive director of the Family Counseling Center. But after the elimination of a state grant that helps community mental health centers cover the cost of employing a psychiatrist, Crabb and mental health providers throughout Illinois are worried they soon may not be able to offer assistance to others in need.
Life-saving services, the services that minister to my success as an adult, should not be sacrificed.
Often, clinics don't have a full-time psychiatrist, but bring one in to meet with patients and prescribe medication. Last fiscal year, the grant supporting those services amounted to $27 million. Governor Bruce Rauner called for zeroing out the grant under the budget he presented to lawmakers in February. Still, directors of the community mental health centers say they were taken by surprise when the Illinois Department of Human Services essentially ended the grant by not sending out the contracts tied to it. Some centers have reserves and lines of credit they can call on, but several are concerned they may have to stop offering psychiatric care or even close their doors altogether.
We're good. good through this month, and you know, I figure we can probably make November work. But if something doesn't happen by December or January at the latest, then that could be a real reckoning for not just my agency, but in talking with other administrators, several other agencies as well.
That was Kenneth Polke, executive director of a mental health center based in the town of Paris. His clinic employs the only psychiatrist consistently practicing in Edgar and Clark counties. The elimination of the grant follows years of cuts to funding for mental health and addiction treatment services. Providers say the state is now ill-equipped to treat people in crisis needing inpatient care. Ken Polke recounts a recent incident when a patient came to the local hospital for help.
No bed could be found in the entire state of Illinois. That poor individual was stuck in an ER bed for 4.5 days. If that wasn't a challenge to your mental health, I don't know what would be.
A placement was eventually found, but not in Illinois.
The slap in the face was, after all of that, there wasn't even an Illinois provider that would be able to get this individual in. The individual had to go to Indiana.
Polke says that if patients lose access to their medication because they can't see a psychiatrist, more will end up in emergency rooms. At a recent conference for providers, Department of Human Services Secretary James Demas reportedly called the grants unsustainable and told the group that a better funding model is needed. The department says that once a budget is approved, it does plan to fund other programs that support psychiatric services. As the budget impasse captures headlines, the state's long-standing problems quietly persist. For instance, a recent push to reform the inequitable system for funding K-12 education has lost momentum. Education Desk reporter Dusty Rhodes looked at the issue through the lens of school fundraising efforts in this April story.
Okay, everybody, pickups to measure 40. And
let's go fly a kite up to the highest height.
Rehearsing her students for their big spring musical, Kim Mandrell has already crossed two major concerns off her list. She's decided not to have Mary Poppins fly, and this year, for the first time ever, she doesn't have to worry about the physical safety of the audience. See, Mandrell is music director at Mount Carmel High School in Wabash County. It's a small county, but Mandrell's spring musicals are so popular, they've sold out every show for the past 5 years. But it was always tricky selling tickets for seats that kept crumbling. The school auditorium was built in 1963, and its 50-year-old wooden seats were breaking down.
We had one of the chairs fall apart. They would remove a seat from the back with cast iron. Of course, it can't be welded to be fixed, so they had to take the parts and put them on the chairs in front, which meant then each time you did that, we lost a chair in the back.
They were down to 200 seats, supplemented by 160 folding chairs. Then Mandrell came up with a plan.
We looked to our Alumni Association Foundation and said, here's an idea.
The foundation launched a campaign to replace the old wooden seats. They raised enough to buy 364 modern padded seats. These were installed last summer. That marked the first time Mount Carmel High had resorted to raising money through a foundation, but it's a concept that's catching on. Illinois, more than any other state in the nation, relies on property taxes to support public schools. With concerns over school funding, at least 70 Illinois districts have turned to foundations to fill the gaps. But what counts as a gap depends on what district you're in. I found another foundation raising money to replace seats, but these weren't in the auditorium.
This particular year, we focused our efforts on raising funds to renovate our planetarium.
That was Fran Kahn, executive director of the Evanston Township High School Foundation. And yes, you heard correctly. She said planetarium. The foundation raised more than $720,000, enough for Dolby surround sound, LED cove lighting, and of course, new seats, $1,000 apiece. Kahn says it will be
similar to an IMAX theater. The projection system will really be incredible.
The foundation also maintains an endowment of more than $3 million. Springfield's District 186 formed the first public school foundation in Illinois almost 40 years ago. Terry Benson, the current foundation president, was a teacher when it started.
Initially, the concept was certainly to provide the extras.
They awarded small grants to teachers, built computer labs, and helped sponsor the annual All City Music Festival. but the decrease in state funding has shifted the foundation's focus.
I think we're entering a phase now where not only are we trying to provide extras, but we actually are providing some necessities. We have provided shoes for teams. We have provided warm-ups or uniforms, bags to carry their gear.
Unlike Springfield and Evanston, the Mount Carmel High School Foundation doesn't have any new projects on the horizon. Mandrell desperately needs to replace the 50-year-old lighting system hanging above her stage, but her current concern is paying for buses to take students to music competitions.
With recent cuts, it's just so frustrating. So I think I just have kind of in my mind pushed pause and we'll just wait and see what happens.
Here we go again.
I'm Dusty Rhodes.
Ready, set, and big time!
I'm Illinois Issues editor Jamie Dunn, and today we're taking a look at the top stories from the past year. Illinois is headed into 2016 without a state budget and with no obvious path to compromise in sight. Where do we go from here? Will lawmakers and the governor ever be able to come to terms on a budget and start to tackle the other enormous problems the state faces? Illinois Issues columnist Charlie Wheeler, who's been observing Illinois government for decades, proposed a way for Democrats and Rauner to break through the current gridlock. Brian Mackey sat down with Wheeler to talk about his column.
Charlie, you write that you think there's a way out of this morass, sort of a practical way forward here.
Yeah, and the column is basically based on my experience over, you know, decades of watching Illinois government, most of the time divided government with Republican governor, Democratic majorities in the General Assembly, sit down and negotiate an agreement without calling each other names, without all this overblown rhetoric, instead saying, okay, let's get down to business. And I took as a starting point the five essentials that the governor says he must have, and I kind of looked at him and said, okay, here's two where the Democrats could easily compromise. Here's one where they could split the difference. Here's another two that he could back off on with no great loss. It starts with the notion that people are going to decide to be grown up. They're going to decide to sit down and be rational and try and work out some practical solution and do something for the people of Illinois. But the bottom line is it requires people to be statesmen. I mean, as I say in the column, it's not rocket science.
To read the details of Wheeler's plan and the other Illinois Issues stories of the year, including some that weren't mentioned here, go to wuis.org.